You make this rather snappy, won't you? I have some very heavy thinking to do before 10 o'clock.
Hey guys, welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Get It Right, Texoma. We're the Texoma Trio. I'm Mike Hendren. This is Terry McAdams. And that over there is the one, the only, Trey Sorala.
Thank God, one and only, right?
A lot of people kind of feel that way about me. They're like, thank God there's only one. They wasn't twins, you know?
Yeah.
Terrible.
Even though you have twins in your family.
We got several sets of twins in the family.
But your brother and sister are twins.
They're twins. And
the bad news, they're identical twins.
I know. And one's female.
Yeah, yeah. How that happened.
I don't know. It's really weird. Anyway, it's when you start researching your family, you figure out how many twins you got in the family and some of the, you know, cousins, I got cousins I've never met.
Actually. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So I know they're out there, and they can kind of stay where they are, I think, you know. Anyway.
You ever reached the level of fame yet where they want to come try to see if they can get something out of you, right?
No, but if I ever do, I know there's going to be I can think of about six of them that are going to show up all needing a kidney transplant at the same time.
Yeah, you're not Taylor Swift fame yet.
No, not yet.
By the way, if you watch the Super Bowl the other day, I felt like I've been to a damn Taylor Swift concert. I saw as much of her as I did any individual player.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm actually proud of the fact that I did not watch any of it.
It was a good game. Yeah. It really was. If you like football, I don't really care about the 49ers or the Chiefs, but if you like football, that was one hell of a football game.
Okay, so let me before we really get started here, let me just go ahead and address the controversy. Travis Kelce, getting in Andy Reid's face, and actually almost shoving Andy Reid, and getting in his face.
Yeah, He's put me in, coach. I'm assuming that's what it was about.
Yeah,
I'm assuming so. That's what I mean, you couldn't tell. I mean, it was one of those deals. I didn't see it happen until after the fact or whatever. Yeah. It happens. It happens.
Okay, so
he didn't hurt him. He didn't throw him to the ground.
No, he didn't. He didn't. But the optics are really bad. It looked like really unprofessional, really unsportsmanlike behavior. And I actually had a guy on Facebook come at me and go, you know, have you never played sports before? You don't understand that kind of passion is understood that's going to happen and coaches are okay with it. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, why are you defending Kelce? So what, are you in the will or something? Come on. You can be passionate about something and not be a complete jerk about it.
Yeah, well.
And it looks like he's just being a jerk to his coach.
Yeah, but I really don't know. Without context, I wouldn't pass judgment. If he's walking down the street and he walked up to a man who was twice his age and grabbed a hold of him and screamed at him, yes, that's a different story. But we don't know what the context is and things like that. Because I will tell you, I've gotten in coaches' faces, I've gotten in referees' faces. When I was playing sports, I've gotten in a lot of people's faces, and I never was playing to make money. It was always just for fun. So, maybe or maybe not. I don't want to pass judgment without knowing what the whole story was.
I think one thing that you have to be mindful of now, especially when you're on a national stage like that, and there are literally millions of eyeballs on you, but also you know that anything you do is going to immediately become internet fodder.
Right away. Yeah.
So I think you do have to be mindful of how you portray yourself in that public eye. It's one thing, you know, in the locker room, away from cameras, away from, you know, hopefully there's no cameras and hopefully nobody's recording anything. You know, things are private. But when you're out on that field and you know, there's no question, you're now in a very, very public setting and you're... Your every action, your every reaction is going to be not only recorded, shared, reshared, traded all over the globe thanks to the internet, but it's also going to be examined under a microscope.
Yeah, but I don't want football. I don't want players to feel like that. I'm sorry. You don't want to tell you go out there and be an animal, but be mindful of all this crap. I'm one of those. It's like you go out there, you play as hard as you can. You have to be somewhat animalistic to play.
Oh, no doubt about that.
Especially when you get to that level.
No doubt about that.
And I it's one of those deals. I don't want players worried about repercussions and all that. I want them going out there and playing football. Don't break the rules. Don't cheap shot guys. Don't take people's knees out and things like that. That's a different story. But go out there and play as absolutely hard as you can and screw the public and screw what everybody thinks. I mean, the fact of the matter is, who cares? If they keep coming back for more, they keep coming back for more. That's one thing I like about Donald Trump. I don't like everything Donald Trump says, but I like the fact that Donald Trump plays with passion. He plays politics with passion.
He does.
And he doesn't worry about what everybody's thinking about or how to craft every word and things like that. So
yeah, I was watching a thing the other day online. It was an interview that he did when he was 34 years old. And the interviewer is asking him point blank, would you ever want to be president? And he said no.
Was it Oprah Winfrey?
Oh, no, this was a different interview.
Okay.
At first, I thought it might have been Barbara Walters, but it wasn't.
Oh.
But it was. But he was 34 years old. They very specifically said he's 34.
Yeah.
In the interview. So, you know, this was at least 35 years ago now.
Yeah.
And so this would have been what late 80s, you know. And he said he didn't want to be president, and he was really. It upset him that so many talented, qualified people who had the acumen and the intelligence to be in politics did not want to be in politics.
Right.
So, well, Trey, we got a couple of local things here. The Huskies Block Party is coming up May 25th at Castaway Cove, right?
That's right. Yeah, as you know, if you're local. Wichita Falls is going from three schools to two.
Yep.
And I'm imagining, I haven't heard any information from anybody from Wichita Falls High School or from Ryder. By the way, if you want to get some information out, that's what we want to do. We want to put a local spin on everything.
Mm-hmm.
We want to help inform people what's going on locally. So if you would, please contact one of us and get some information. Terry McAdams at MacTech Solutions. Yep. Trey at Eddie Hills Fun Cycles. Or Mike Hendren, you used to have to watch him driving around and see it. But Hendren Media Solutions.
And you can get on the Facebook page.
Get
It Right podcast. And it might change. We might be tweaking the name a little bit here. But if you get on there and like it and get it going, follow us, then you'll get notified. And if you want to let us know, you just let us know right on there.
That's right.
We'll get that message.
But I'm sure that there's going to be some reunion. This is going to be the block party mm-hmm. at the end of the year, and I'm sure there's going to be some of these deals. It's for all classes, and it's going to be at Castaway Cove. And Deb Sherman, who's Husky class of 97, or I'm sorry, 87, mm-hmm. is she's a force of nature when it comes to putting things together. And she and a small group of people put this thing together. And so, anyhow, they're just wanting to kind of have one last hurrah. So,
yeah. Well, so Hershey High School, which that's mine and Trey's alma mater.
Yeah, Mike and I actually graduated high school together.
We did. And it's going away as a high school. Yeah. We keep hearing information that maybe it's going to be converted to a junior high.
Oh, it definitely will. They're actually moving. I know people that work there, and they're saying as soon as school's over, they're moving people out and they're bringing construction crews in and starting on junior high, converting it to a junior high.
Yeah. And I'm glad it's going to get a little bit of work, a little facelift here and there. It's needed some improvements for a while.
Yeah.
And they could certainly build anything they need over there. They got tons of space to grow if they need to.
Yeah, Ryder High School will get the same thing. And I really don't know about Old High, Wichita Falls High School. I don't know what they're going to do there. But Ryder's going to do the same.
I still think that a great repurposing of Wichita Falls High School would be to turn that into a museum, not just for the school district, but maybe even for the region, incorporate some more history. Because it is a historical structure.
It's
over 100 years old. So it does have some history there. Yes, it needs some work to physically improve the building. And I don't know if that money is there or not to do that or if it can be had. But, yes, there is definitely some things that need to be done there. But I do think that there's an opportunity there to make that into a museum a historical piece that the whole region could enjoy and get some benefit out of. And I think there's, I've got some other ideas about what they could do around there.
He's really good at spending other people's money. Yeah. So,
well, and wasn't it?
It's almost like I'm in the government, yeah. Isn't it?
I wonder if I've thought of the North Texas Museum or something that some sort of. I mean, I'm just pitching that. I don't know if it could be
a potential home for them, but I think it, yeah, it could, certainly,
because they're limited on space, aren't they?
I would rather see something happen with that building that repurposes that and continues its benefit.
Well, right now it still may be a school for a while. I don't know ultimately, I just don't know enough about it. We'd have to contact some WFISD officials, but I believe what I've heard is that there's still going to be some purpose of that school. They're still going to have some school there for a while.
Now, you may know, what's happening with the old Harrell School over there on Fifth Street?
I believe the school district is going to demolish that.
I believe that's right. Yeah. Well, I noticed it looks like they're stripping a lot of things out of there, so I thought... Yeah. Okay, they're going to take a
Yeah, that one got hit by that downburst or whatever the heck it is, and yeah. It's an older building. It's just not worth saving.
Yeah, I knew it had done a lot of damage to the roof and some other stuff.
So. Speaking of WFISD, on the 16th, which is, I guess it's Friday, isn't it? Yeah. Wichita Falls ISD is going to have Cowboy Western dress-up day. So, Mike, you'd fit right in right now with your hat.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I do think it's cool, a pretty kind of a neat thing where the Western theme has kind of come back a little bit with younger people. Mm-hmm. There was a time that, you know, like even when we were growing up, if you listened to country music and you were a teenager, that was a really weird thing. And I think also with my kids, our kids, because we have the same age kids, but I think that's kind of coming back. Country is becoming much more mainstream. And I know it's not the same thing, but it is at least a similar culture.
Well, now, did in high school, did you not have your groups? And one of the groups, at least in Worth at Arlington Heights High School in the 80s, mm-hmm. I was there from 79 through 83, and we had the Ropers, and you had the Freaks.
Yeah, we called them Kmart. I called them Kmart Cowboys. A lot of ones that showed up with a belt buckle they hadn't won, with a pair of boots they bought at Kmart, and had never been on a horse or anything like that.
Well, these were in our case, most of them were legitimately, you know, they were hanging out. They rode horses and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And
well, there's plenty of posers.
And then rodeo and all of that. See, most of the Ropers.
We went to Hershey High School. There was no rodeo club at Hershey High School.
No. There were plenty of posers. Yeah, in Wichita Falls there were, too.
Yeah. There were a few of those. Few that were real. But.
Just because you wore the hat and put the rope or the boots on didn't make you a cowboy.
No.
But then we had the in the back of your truck, you had a rack with a shotgun on campus.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. But anyway,
reminiscing. So.
No kidding.
All right.
Well, last time we met, Trey had kind of started, hinted at a topic he wanted to cover. We talked a little bit about the illegal situation, the numbers, the millions of people that have entered this country illegally that have just been released into the country. And Trey has a tie-in to the homelessness problem. Interestingly enough here, I saw a video, I shared a video on Facebook just a couple days ago. This guy is driving through a parking lot in Southern California trying to get into a Home Depot parking lot.
Oh, yes.
The streets, the roads, and even the parking lots themselves are lined with old RVs and trailers and tents and whatnot.
Turned into Homeless Depot.
It's turned into a homeless encampment. Goodness. And we're not talking, you know, 10, 15, 20 people. We're talking hundreds, perhaps even thousands, as you progress through this community in Southern California. California is absolutely overwhelmed with this issue right now, big time.
Yeah,
big time.
Well, I tell you what I've noticed is, and this is in my travels and things like that, just paying attention. Of course, we've had this huge explosion of homeless people.
Yes,
and there's no doubt about it. What you didn't see, or what I, and by the way, this is I'm speaking in generalities, but this is what I've noticed. I'm usually pretty good at noticing things. In the last, let's say previous to the last 5 years, 6 years, something like that, when you saw homeless people, what did you see mostly? You saw a lot of white people and some black people. You did not see a lot of Hispanics.
Right.
If you think back, it's hard to remember, but think back about it. You didn't see a lot of homeless Hispanic people. And I think there's a couple of reasons why. One, in the Hispanic culture, family is very, very important.
Yes.
They tend to take care of, Hispanic people tend to take care of family members better than the white and the black community. In fact, I think the white community is probably the worst, to be honest with you. Also, and there's always been illegal immigration, but in the past, there was not this mass illegal immigration. It was a few people. So somebody would come over here illegally, generally from Mexico. They would get over here. They'd find a place. They would get a job of some sort.
Right.
And then they would call home and say, hey, I came over here. Why don't you come over here? So you might end up with dozens of people living in one house or a small place or like that, but they lived inside.
Right.
I think what's happened is there's so many people that are coming up that are not Mexican anymore. They're not from Mexico. They're from Guatemala. They're from Honduras. They're from Africa. They're from all these other places. They don't know anybody here. No. They're just coming up in mass. And so, therefore, where are they going to live? In the past, a lot of times people had somebody here. They had that anchor. They don't have that here.
Right.
And so, therefore, you now see a lot more Hispanic people than I ever saw that are homeless or living out on the streets or panhandling.
Right.
The other side of it is, even here in Wichita Falls, you go to all the major intersections, there's usually somebody standing there panhandling. That is a very recent phenomenon.
Yeah.
You go to major cities, it's all over.
Yeah. Every corner.
Every corner.
Nearly, yeah.
I've heard, and I don't know if that's the case, but I've heard that's kind of almost like the new prostitution. That these people are being put out there to sit there and ask for money, and they got a pimp. I mean, whether it's a panhandle pimp or something like that, there's somebody coordinating and organizing this.
Hey, this is a better spot for you. So they do the research,
and they expect a cut of what you get.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm just throwing that out there. I have nothing to back. No, I don't have any hard evidence to back it up. But if you just think about it, throw out there, listen, and think of what I said. And just see if some of that doesn't line up.
It does seem an awful coincidence, doesn't it? That we've got this sudden, in the last few years, this sudden continuous surge of people entering the country illegally. And again, I'm going to add, again, and I guess I'm going to keep asking until somebody in the mainstream media, local, regional, national, I don't care, but one of you, somebody please stand up and ask the question. Who is financing the trip for people that are coming, that are walking into our country through Mexico, but they're coming from Russia, China, Uzbekistan, Syria, Iran. Someone is paying to transport these people to the other side of the globe. They're not walking here. They're not coming here. They're not stowing away on a ship. They're getting on a dadgum plane and they're flying either to Central America or directly into Mexico. And then once they're there, someone, we have to assume probably the cartels play a role in this in Mexico. They have to.
I've heard they are, yeah.
They're getting them to within walking distance of the border. These people are walking into the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. They're very well fed, very healthy, and very clean.
Okay, so on that. Take that.
We don't have a countdown timer going. Is that screwed up? Is that screwing us up any?
No.
Okay.
That's the recording, how much time is left on the.
Okay. I was just making sure. Last time it seemed like we had some sort of countdown timer.
No. Oh, okay, yeah.
So I have a question, and we probably don't know the answer to this, but wouldn't we all expect that despite the president at any time, you know, whatever party's in control, that our intelligence agencies are actually looking into that?
You surely would think.
And so let's assume they are. Let's just.
I'm assuming they are.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's just their job. They're charged with doing that, and they're going to run autonomously to some extent on their own. So why don't we have – let's assume they have it, and I think that's a reasonable assumption, that they're looking into this and that they have agents that are in Mexico, and they're somebody's – that's their job. And so they go in and they find out and look into this of where those people are coming from, if they're not Mexican nationals or even from South America or whatever. They're not from this part of the world.
Right.
Where are they coming from? So they're looking into that. So then is that inherently classified type information, and that then it requires some sort of administrative action at a higher level in order for that information to be released?
The dissemination of that information and the action that information is taken is above their – the intelligence community brings it in.
Right. But they can't just release it on their own.
Yeah, no. If you think about it, they have to – that has to be referred to some other Justice Department, or has to be referred to somebody.
Right.
And the dissemination of that information and the action taken that's based on that information, it comes from another level of administration.
So what I don't understand, though, is why we don't have people in the media – asking the questions, pushing the issue. You know, they'll push everything else. They'll ask everything else. You know, let's just take, for example, the documents that were found, the classified documents, and some of them even marked top secret, that were found in the possession of Joe Biden at his home, laying in a box in a garage.
Well, he's too old and you know, forgetful, well, so we're right not here it is.
He's a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. That was what the special counsel, the special prosecutor came up with, or special counsel came up with.
But you take that, you know, the media has beat that to death, and the same thing with President Trump and documents that he had at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh my gosh,
they've beat that story to death. They'll grab onto something and run with it. Nobody, I have not heard one person in the mainstream media ask the question about, how are these people getting, who is financing their trip literally from the other side of the planet so that they can be in Mexico and walk into our country? Somebody is financing that. Who's doing it?
What about Peter Ducey? Is he not? I don't know.
One of the other things here on the list, the story of Ruben being denied a visa. Trey, what is that all about?
Well, this is sometimes you have collateral damage, and I believe that this is a collateral damage has to do with our this huge influx of illegal immigration right now. My brother-in-law's name is Ruben.
Yeah.
He's a manufacturer welder from England.
Yeah.
He owns property in America.
Okay.
He has a welding shop that's set up in America that's sitting dormant right now, because right before COVID, he had to go back to England because the COVID was coming and his visa was getting close to running out. He was on a some sort of work, not work visa, but it was a business owner visa.
Okay.
He applied to get that visa renewed. Okay. So here's a guy who's got 40 years of welding experience, has invested in America, zero criminal record, none at all, and he was denied a visa to come back into America.
Tell me the logic
behind that.
We're talking about an upstanding, productive person with experience and talents that we need in this country.
Yes, skilled labor.
Skilled labor that we need in this country, and he gets denied.
Yep. You tell me. And he owns property here.
What was their basis for denying his visa?
I don't really know. I don't know all the details.
And do they even have to provide a reason?
I don't know that they do. That's what I'm getting at. When you hear these people that say, these people just want a job, they just want a job, but we're going to let them in. But here you have somebody who has who can prove a resume of skilled labor.
Yes.
A owner of land, owns property in America that he paid for, has zero debt on or anything like that, and has zero criminal record, and he cannot be given a visa to come to America.
But what are the priorities, though, laid out? I bet you the priorities have more to do with technology in that, not the skills that he's bringing. I bet that plays a role.
It might, but what about the people that are walking across this border? You think they have technology skills? That's what I'm getting at. That's my point. My point is, I'm not saying you can't get a visa from another from another country. What I'm simply saying is you have somebody who has all these qualifications,
and yet you
have people that are walking across the border being just released into the country to here you go.
Right.
It makes no sense.
Exactly. Somebody who's coming in illegally, first of all, and probably maybe they do have some skills, and they're probably let's say they're traditional trade type skills that we know that a lot of Hispanic folks come in and they're doing roofing jobs, they're doing landscaping, they're doing all kinds of things. Not saying they can't do other stuff, but the path that they're coming is they're actually encouraged by the administration to do this and to break the law, and they're not putting any stop to it. They're not using the same laws that are on the books that Trump used to cut it down, and they're just letting it and then creating a problem that our border towns don't like. And so then as Texas, we ship them off the north and they get to deal with that. But anyway, all of that is very two-faced.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just don't
very
understand.
Very hypocritical when you have that.
The dichotomy.
Yeah. No, it doesn't make any sense.
You tell me where it makes sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Well, but you'll have people in the political realm that'll say, well, America needs more immigrants. We need this skilled labor. We need these people with these talents.
Yep,
but then someone like this shows up with the talent, and you tell him no. And there's nothing in his background that should prohibit him legally from being in this country.
And he can prove it. I mean, he has an official record from a close ally to America, United Kingdom.
Yeah.
He can easily prove that he has no criminal record. Right. He can prove that he has money. He can prove that he owns land and property in America. Not going to take a nickel off the American public.
Yeah,
well, and I can't square those things away. They don't make any sense.
Your wife immigrated to America.
Yeah,
did it the legal way.
100% legal.
Spent what, a decade?
Yep, close to a decade. Close to over $10,000. Immigrating to America and doing it the right way.
And ultimately got her U.S. citizenship and is an American citizen now.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's a wild thing. We've got to get people. We've got to have people in political power who are interested in actually fixing what's broken.
That's absolutely right.
And right now we don't have that. We've had, and this is the thing. Republicans have had opportunities in the past when they had control to fix it, they just kick the can down the road. Democrats, same thing. You just kick the can down the road. You don't care about actually fixing it. Don't tell us you do, because that's a lie. Everyone has had an opportunity to address this and has repeatedly refused to come together and address it. That's got to stop. It's got to stop now. It's got to stop yesterday. Yep. We've got to get things on track here. Before you can even have a substantive conversation about deporting people who are in the country illegally, you got to physically fix the border. You got to fix what's broken with the border. You got to stop people from being able to get in so easily. Then you can have a conversation about rounding up people who are in this country illegally who have criminal records, members of MS-13 and other gangs, people that are drug mules, terrorists even. Oh. Then you can start talking about getting them out of this country and keeping them out of this country. You got to physically fix the border,
or say people that are lawful abiding, law abiding citizens that are good people, but are going to come in here and use American taxpayer resources. That's what it all boils down to.
Right.
The fact is, we have a finite amount of tax money. We have a finite amount of resources.
Right.
And when you have these cities, especially up in the Northeast, that these people who pay taxes, and usually, by the way, it affects low-income people. The fact of the matter is the rich people are the upper-middle-class people. They don't have to rely on public land to take their kid to play this and play that. They don't have to rely on that sort of thing. But people that rely on public property, public land, common use areas and things like that, public schools and those sort of things, people that rely on those for their kids' education, for their kids' recreation and things like that, they're the ones that are getting squeezed because the powers that be in their city are using those resources to go towards illegal people. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm an American citizen. I paid taxes. So why am I getting squeezed out of my own space that I pay taxes and support?
Yeah.
Because people who are not paying taxes that are here illegally.
And something to point out on that, you were talking about the budgets and things. In Texas, if our tax money is being diverted away from things that we wanted to do, mm-hmm. but they're then being forced into things we have to do in order to deal with this crisis, then that money in the state of Texas isn't, there's no unlimited check. We don't have, our constitution within the state of Texas requires that we have a balanced budget every 2 years. And that is different than, apparently California apparently just spends whatever they want, like the federal government. But we can just, the federal government just print money. I mean, quote, print money. It's
The federal government, not just to print money, but they keep raising the debt ceiling.
Right. Well, that's printing money. Essentially, yeah. Because it's the credit card balance is bigger and or available. Your available credit.
Yeah.
And so it's all it's doing is increasing. But we're not paying it off. If we're never paying off that credit card.
I've used the analogy before. You imagine that you have a credit card with a $100,000 credit limit, and that's what you pay your bills on. And you hit your credit limit, and you call the bank up and say, "Hey, I've hit my credit limit, but I still have bills to pay. I need you to raise my credit limit to $200,000."
They're gonna
laugh at you. They may sue you. I mean, whatever. The fact of the matter is, you're not going to get that. You're not going to get your credit line doubled simply because you need that credit card to pay your bills. Right. But that is essentially what America does. We've got this big credit card, and we just keep raising the limit on it and allowing ourselves to go further and further into debt. Yeah. I think we have now passed $34 trillion, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And that is the on-the-books today debt. That doesn't take into account future obligations, unfunded mandates, things like, upcoming and future pensions for military and government employees that are
Social
retiring.
Social Security. Medicare, Medicaid.
Oh, my God. Social Security and Medicare accounts for a hell of a huge number. Yeah, we're
at 34, according to the debt clock, the U.S. debt clock.org, $34,227,000,000,000.
Right. This is the number right here that's the most interesting.
Yeah, $212 trillion is U.S. unfunded liabilities.
Yes.
Wow.
So, I mean, we are trillions of dollars in debt, and we don't even, it's not even a topic of discussion anymore. Nobody even brings it up.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's sad.
We probably need to call this one, don't we?
And yeah, let's
set up our other stuff for the next episode.
Yep, well, coming up in the next episode of this podcast, we're going to be talking about some local candidate races going on here in North Texas. And I have been promised, I talked with His Honor, the mayor, Mayor Short. We know him as Tim Short. But I talked to the mayor a couple days ago. He has promised he's coming on the show. He wants to be on the show with us.
Sounds good.
Cool. So we are going to have Wichita Falls Mayor Tim Short as a guest very soon on the show. And we've got a laundry list of things we can talk about.
Oh, yeah, I imagine.
Not the least of which that we're going to get into with the mayor, of course, is going to be, for example, Lake Ringgold. That's going to be a topic. The overall water issues and the economic growth and prosperity of this city. How, what sort of plans do we have in place? What's being done to help us grow in the future? And we'll get into that with the mayor coming up here very soon on this podcast. Until next time, guys, take care of yourselves. We'll see you down the road. We'll catch you next time on Get It Right, Texoma, with the trio, Mike, Terry, Trey. See you next time.